Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sans Pants Radio,
Australia's happiest podcast network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bookish. This is a show where we ask you what's your story and what does it say about you. I'm George Demorelis. Today on the show, you may have seen her on the recent Survivor Brains vs. Brawn season. She's also an international model with degrees in both biology and law, an environmentalist and science communicator, Laura Wells. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm covered in paint, but other than that, I'm great.
Look, it's a look. You know, it's the whole Renault look. I think you're doing, you're nailing it.
I am nailing it with house paint on my fingernails. I love it.
Yeah. Nice. Is that a new place you're moving into, or is it just making the old one look nicer?
Yeah, we're currently living in our renovating hellhole right now, but we will be living here for a little while too.
I've had friends who said like they one moved out and said it was the best decision ever because, yeah, renovating whilst living there is very hard. It never ends.
It is. We don't even have a toilet right now. It's like being back on Survivor.
I was going to say, you've had some good training for that though, haven't you? So
I have. Sleeping under the stars and pooping in a hole. That's fine. I can do it.
Yeah, look, it's if you're an environmentalist, you've got to be able to embrace that stuff, right? That's how it all is.
Absolutely. I'm one with nature.
That's a positive way of putting it. I like that, yes.
or doing my number ones in nature.
Or both. Yeah, that's...
Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah. Cool. Well, look, your intro covered so much, but how about we start with the book and then we'll jump around from there, if that's cool.
Absolutely.
So if you want to introduce, your book of choice for today is?
My book of choice for today is The Illustrated Encyclopedia of Peculiar Pairs in Nature by Sammy Bailey. And it is awesome.
I like that. Yes. Do you want to give a quick description of what it is?
Absolutely. So it's this amazing book. It's only just come out in the last couple of months, and it's literally exactly what it says, an illustrated encyclopedia. It's for adults and kids, and it's all about symbiotic relationships in nature between different animals or flora and fauna, and there is just some absolutely mind-blowing connections and relationships in this book that things you've never heard of before, really weird, quirky things, just animals from all over the world. And it's just this, you know, amazing, mind-blowing book that you don't want to put down, and it's super easy to read.
Yeah, like that. I mean, when you mentioned that, I looked it up and I was like, oh yeah, that does sound like such an interesting insight you don't think about as much, because like when you're saying symbiotic relationship, you just mean like basically two animals that almost use each other to survive, or use isn't the right word, but they need each other to kind of survive. Is that right?
Yeah. So symbiotic relationships can be all different forms. So there's commensalism, where one animal benefits and another one, it's to the other one's detriment. There's mutualism, which both animals benefit. And then there is, oh no, how can I forget this? And I'm a biologist, and I was only telling someone about this the other day. Hold on. Commensalism, mutualism, and I'm going to come back to this because I am like got my head stuck in like a paint can right now.
Exactly. I think that's fair enough. Your heads are covered in paint and I'm asking you biological. Well, actually, you're asking yourself. I didn't ask for the names.
Yeah, I know. I happily gave them up to, tell my extreme, absolute. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm going to get this. Predation.
Yeah.
So there's predation where one benefits obviously to the detriment of the other, mm-hmm. mutualism and commensalism. Oh, parasitism. That's the other one. God, what am I thinking? Parasitism, commensalism, and mutualism.
Yeah.
Okay. So one parasite, obviously, that makes sense. Commensalism, one benefits, the other one doesn't. And mutualism, they both benefit. Okay.
Right.
We got there. Okay. Man, that was a struggle.
No, look, it was fun to experience that live, to be honest.
Thank you. I mean, feel free to cut all that crap out. And you can leave that in too.
Because straight up the thing is interesting because, like, okay, I can jump to about 50 different things of what this says about your own stuff that you do. But I guess I'll start with the most basic and obvious, which is, like, from the animal point of view. Do you have an example of that? Like, because it is very cool. God. So is there, like, that stands out that people will be like, what?
Yes, there are so many that stands out. And I think one of my most favorite and my most weird, it's something that I knew about before reading this book, but page 62 of the book really highlights this in a really good way, and I'm just going to read a little bit of it. It's the green banded brood sac and the amber snail. So think of an amber snail like a typical garden snail that you find, and the green banded brood sac is a flatworm, and this is a form of parasitism. So the worm actually gets itself inside of the snail. So the snail eats the egg of the worm, and then the worm infects the snail and gets into its eye stalks and grows within its eye stalks and basically turns this snail into a zombie. And the worm is now controlling the worm is now controlling the snail through its eyes. And what it does is it wiggles its eyes around like it's a juicy caterpillar. A bird then comes down and eats the snail. This gets hectic, man. So we've got this like zombie snail that is inhabited by a worm that's pretending to be a caterpillar within the snail's eyes. The bird then eats the worm, and this is perfect for the worm because then the worm lives inside the bird's anus to finish its life cycle for the bird to then shit out the worm and the life cycle to begin all over again so that a snail can eat the egg of a green banded brood sac.
To be honest, you started with the first one. I was like, the zombie thing. I'm like, oh yeah, I think I've heard something like that before, but then that's like a whole other level. I can't. It's amazing.
Yeah, man. Oh, it's incredible.
Like, that's because, like, you just, like, evolution to produce that. Like, it takes so long. Like, it's so weird that all of them are involved in that process in a way. In a weird way.
I know. And how, like, you know, next time you look at a cute little garden snail, check out its eyes because it might be inhabited and be a zombie from this green branded brood sac worm.
See, I like, yeah, no, that's a good one. Although that does sound like a purely parasitic one, I guess.
That is definitely parasitic. The snail is not coming back from that guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I think that would have to be one of my favorites.
That's a great one. I agree.
Thank you.
This probably actually ties in as well with the other thing, because, like, obviously, yes, you look at something like that, and probably as well, that's parasitic. It shows you how, like, complex and interconnected the environment is, I guess.
Oh,
and
my God, absolutely, yes.
So I'm looking at, like, your history. I mean, obviously, we should talk about the survivor stuff. I'm sure there'll be some fans who'll be like, tell us everything. But actually, I'm so interested in the science stuff as well. Because your job, like, well, one of the things you say is, as a science communicator, is, like, to explain this biodiversity, I guess, the way it's all interconnected. These are kind of examples you use. Like, what is that like to get across to people, I guess?
Yeah, I think the weirder and grosser the examples, the better. Mainly because, you know, I have the mind of a 5-year-old child and I like fart and poop jokes. So if I'm going to enjoy the examples, then I'm sure other people will too. But yeah.
More worms and anuses, that's what I...
Right, I mean, God, nature is crazy. Full of secret buttholes. But for me, I guess working as a science communicator, so I studied biology, marine biology, and I really loved the fact that I learned about all of these amazing connections in nature and how interconnected not only nature is aside from us, but how interconnected we are with nature and how it basically fuels us to be able to live. And, you know, if we weren't here, nature would just go on without us and it would be fine. So that kind of, I went down that road and I really loved learning everything about biology. And then living overseas and working as a model and getting to visit all of these amazing, beautiful locations to shoot in, I started seeing really like our human impact on the world. And it made me realize, you know, what I've learned in biology, like this, and what we are now doing to the planet, it needs to be spoken about. People need to understand this, because if we don't protect the world around us, we are not going to survive. And that's kind of led me into this world of a science communicator and really fostering and teaching and sharing solutions about how we as humans can really do better in our everyday lives to positively affect the world around us. And I absolutely love that as a science communicator. But yes, the grosser and the more weird the examples of things I can use, the better.
Yeah, no, I could. It definitely helps. Yeah. So I guess, like, on that note, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but like, I guess one of the things, because it seems to mirror in some ways, the one that stands out to me straight away is like someone like David Attenborough, who started off, you know, obviously just with a passion for it, but then over time, he's slowly become a more and more like outspoken in what he's been seeing in front of him. And it's like almost that now seems like his main focus is just that rather than the other stuff. Like, which I guess is like, is it? You kind of have to, don't you?
Yeah, I think you have a responsibility to do that. When you have a voice and you have a platform and a love and a knowledge and a passion about it and an understanding, because, I mean, I guess with Sir David Attenborough, I love the fact that now he is very vocal about what we are doing to the planet, what he's seen over his immense career, literally spanning decades. And, you know, what we're doing, but also what we can do and the fact that there is hope and that we need to work together. And I love the fact that his tune has changed from, you know, this is the amazing world and look at all of these interactions, to, well, actually, guys, we're kind of fucked it here. And I've witnessed
much more
it.
Polite language. Yeah.
Yeah. So he says it in a very more eloquent way than that. Oi, dickheads, you've really fucked it up. So I love this transition that he's now having, because he is so revered in the industry and people look at him as an authority on our environment and all these animals, to then for him to turn around and say, well, actually, guys, this is what we're doing and it's super negative and we need to wake up, because I've shown you all these things and you've fallen in love with all these creatures and these ecosystems. Now it's time to protect them and it's up to us. And, you know, we are the last generation that is here that is going to experience these, but we are the generation that needs to change right now and make a positive impact for all the future generations going forward. So I love that about him. And I guess from my point of view and what I do now is, you know, really taking that and taking that part of his transition to show people, well, yeah, there are all these things that you can do every single day to make a difference. And they can be as tiny as not flushing the toilet when you do a pee, to, you know, bigger and better things like where you invest your superannuation. So, you know, the boring adult things. Mm. But there's lots of things we can do.
Yeah, I think that's part of like, I mean, I guess, do you have, because I feel it sometimes, especially when you have friends, and maybe you now don't have to deal with those people anymore, but like who still don't seem to get the full like seriousness. Because like, I think it's almost the case where if you can't possibly get the full seriousness of it, because it would be overwhelming, but like that doesn't mean you can't at least acknowledge that you're choosing not to get it and then do the best you can. It's kind of how I look at it, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's really hard to put the blinkers on and just completely tune out to all of the things that are going on, especially with the environment, but it is easy to just tune out when life gets in the way. But I think when there are simple little habits that you can create to make a difference, then it makes it a little bit easier to comprehend and digest, because there is so much and it can be really overwhelming and it can cause a lot of people to spiral to the depths of environmental depression and be like, well, it doesn't matter. What I do doesn't matter. So why would I bother? So changing that mindset and turning it into a positive one, because those little things that you can change and that do turn into a positive allow you to keep the ball rolling, and you want to then do bigger and better things, and you inadvertently spread the message to all of the people around you as well just by doing those little things.
Yes. Is that something you had, like you experienced yourself, like kind of swinging into that and then trying to come out of it, or was it something you've kind of been on top of?
Oh, heck yeah. Definitely. Like, I have spent so much time working on environmental campaigns with a lot of amazing people and getting so many facts and figures thrown at me that at one stage I was like, well, it's screwed. I mean, what's the bloody point? Am I just preaching to a brick wall? Because it's not just, it shouldn't be, the burden shouldn't be on the individual to change. It should actually be on governments and corporations, and there should be legislation and regulation and policy around all of these things that are really, you know, especially contributing negatively to climate change. And so I did kind of fall into this hole, but then I was like, hold on, if you want people to change and you know, working as a science communicator, a depresso science communicator that's like, well, don't worry about it, it's fine. It's all screwed up. That's not really going to affect much change. So I really had to be like, kick my own ass and be like, you know what? We can do this. And it takes all of our voices and all of our efforts and little actions to make that difference. And when you grow that choir and it turns into an army, then that's when you really affect change from the bottom up. To switch it to a top-down approach. So that's when you got your governments and everyone changing their policy and legislation to really make a huge difference.
Yeah, I think I think that point, and it can be hard because of the fact that, yeah, the only change can happen from such a huge, especially something like this where there's so many entrenched interests who don't want to do it, the only way you can change it is such a big swell. So it can be a bit daunting when you think about it from an individual point of view.
Totally, but there's so many people out there that want to make a change, and we can be that tsunami that we need to really, stick it to our government to change and make the changes that we want to see, because our governments are in place for us, technically. So, that's why our votes matter. Oh, yes, look at me go. I'm just so damn positive now. I'm all hopped up on environmental advocate juice. Yeah. Look at me go. I know that. I've seen it happen. I've seen change. I've seen policies change. I've seen regulation and governments flip and really do the righty by us and by the environment and by our future. So if we keep beating that drum loud enough, then it does eventually work. We just have to make sure we don't fall into that big old environmental depression hole.
Yeah, that's it. I know. It's important, I guess actually, and especially with you, because you're around it, you probably... There's signs that people can tell. It's like, oh, no, he's looking at too many facts. It's getting away from there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I feel for the climate scientists that are in those trenches every single day that are just like, well, do you know what? Like everything, all the science, all the data tells us that we're really fucked up here. Like, and for us to go back and actually make a difference, like we need to do it now. Actually, we needed to do it 10 years ago, but now would be better than tomorrow. So can we just get on with it? And as a scientist that's dedicated their entire lives to studying this, for them to be put down and told that, oh, I don't know if I really believe in climate change. I mean, the science is not up for debate, dickheads. This is happening. That I really struggle to fathom how people go, I'm not really convinced about climate change. Well, I'm sorry, it doesn't matter if you're not convinced it's actually happening and the science tells us that and you're not a scientist. Yeah. And, what you read on the Daily Mail, I'm sorry, doesn't really cut it, buddy.
Yeah, no, I guess. And so do you interact with people like that still in what you're doing?
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You have to. I actually did it the other day with one of the tradies that was working at my house who literally said to me, yeah, I mean, I'm not really convinced about all this climate change stuff yet. And as he was fixing our roller doors, I had a really good conversation with him. And I mean, I started out, you have to start nice and you have to start positive and you have to kind of stroke these people's egos into not telling them that you're an idiot. You just do it gently. It's like a nice little butt tap, like, oh, you're an idiot, but it's okay. We'll get you over the line. told him, I did tell him that, well, unfortunately, the science isn't really up for debate and your opinion on science, on climate change isn't really relevant because it's actually happening, but these are the reasons why. And so you interact with them on a level that means something to them and kind of you understand what their center of gravity is. So for some people it might be economics or their family or their home or what's really important to these people, and you talk to them on that level and give them examples of what climate change will mean to them. And that's kind of where you get people, and also telling them that yes, we have had a lot of carbon in our atmosphere in the past, but we've never had it happen this fast. And so ecosystems and animals, they can't adapt. And they couldn't adapt last time when it happened slowly. And that's why we have mass extinctions and die-off. So there is no way they can adapt now when it's just this exponential increase of carbon in our atmosphere. Yeah.
And is that the kind of thing where, like, I guess because your tone of voice as you were saying that just then suggests to me that you've got, like, probably 5 or 10 talking points you know they're going to throw at you. You've heard 10 million times and you're like, oh, okay, yes, we know. And then, like, very gently, is that kind of how it works? You almost know all of the points they're going to make?
Yeah, it is. It's usually the same old from these people because they've been conditioned and just heard this from, you know, misinformation and disinformation as well from specific either media outlets or things that they read or, you know, their circle of friends. So you'd kind of know the facts to hit them back with for those opinions that they have. Yeah, which works well. I mean, actually the Climate Council, they are one of the best resources for learning how to talk to people about climate change. They have lots of good talking points on there for, like, how to talk to someone at Christmas time about climate change and, yeah, hitting them with all those different centers of gravity.
Oh, really? That's really – because I was going to say that sounds like actually now from your role of communication, that's actually probably part of it, is just how to get people to spread the communication without – you know, getting angry.
Absolutely. And, you know, it takes a long time to realize, like, to not get angry. I used to run a beach cleanup group every weekend in Sydney. And so we'd go out and pick up rubbish for half an hour on the beach. And it was great. And, you know, it brings a lot of people together and teaches a lot of people about plastic pollution and the detrimental effects it has on our ocean. And people would purposefully drop rubbish in front of me for me to pick it up rather than them take it to the bin on their way back to their car. And I would say to them, I'm sorry, but, you know, that's not litter. That's, you know, that's your rubbish and you can put it in the bin. And they would do it again. And I would have to stop myself from getting really, really angry and wanting to rip their heads off. And I realized then once I changed my thought process to be like, well, you know what? This person's just actually a dum-dum. They don't know and they're uneducated. So why not educate them in this really positive manner? I'd be like, hey, guys, do you know that if you leave that there, that's going to wash out there and it's going to kill this and this and blah, blah, blah. And they'd be like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I just figured the beach cleaner comes and picks it up. I'm like, well, there ain't no fairy beach cleaner, guys. So you got to put it in the bin and the recycling bin. And most people were really positive once you were positive to them. If you hit them like with the you're a dickhead, pick it up, they will just continue to be a dickhead because they're defensive. They don't want to be told that they're wrong. Yeah. So positivity, you know, even if it's fake, is the best way to be.
Yeah, because it makes like, yeah, you can't respond because they're already for a fight is almost the thing. So if you come in with something
absolutely
else,
yeah, they're already swinging. So, yeah, so just come in there with this, like, big cheesy grin, like, hey, everybody. It seems to work.
Yeah. I mean, that, like, the one-second satisfaction of the anger, but way, way more effective and satisfying in the long run. I can see that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so just, like, to give some background, I guess, because, yeah, you studied biology when you were younger, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. So was that like always the number one passion? Like which direction did you go with the modeling and the law and the...
I know.
I love your list of accomplishments. It sounds like in TV shows when they're describing the girl from out of town and they're like, yeah, she's a biologist and a lawyer. And it's just...
Yeah, she digs around in horse poop for like fun. actually, that is kind of... almost true, but whale poop. We will just talk about that later. I loved biology and science at school. Really, really enjoyed it. Was good at it. Was a big nerd. Like, got put into this biology class after school with all the older kids, and you know, I really nerded out on science. And I knew that when I finished school that I wanted to do some form of science. And originally I was going to study cell and molecular biology and look at DNA. And then I realized, actually, I really prefer biology rather than chemistry. And that was really chemistry heavy. So I switched over and then I thought, oh, actually, scientists don't make that much money. Maybe I'll do law too, and I can be a protector of our oceans, and I can practice law of the sea, and so I can affect, you know, policy and regulation change from being an advocate and a lawyer for our oceans. And then
I can't believe that. Yeah.
And then I finished doing my law degree and I was like, oh God, no, that is not for you, Laura. You know, it was great and I learned a lot, but I just knew that being in an office all day was just not for me. And then in the meantime, I started modeling, and which was never an intended career path. And so when I graduated, I was like, just do 1 year of modeling. And then I moved to New York and London, and it just kind of fostered, and then it just kept going from there. So I've been modeling for like 15 years full-time now, and have been doing my science all along the way, I guess, and working with lots of brands and on environmental campaigns and as an activist and a spokesperson. And it's just grown into this big world of science communication and campaigning that I really, really enjoy.
Yeah, no, I can. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm feeling very lazy right now.
Oh, no. You know, I just work alongside all of these really friggin' smart people that are just absolute guns, know politics and regulation inside and out. And my background has helped me with that as well. But, you know, I've worked with some of the most incredible people within some of these environmental organizations that are just like, yes, for the environment, and God, we're going to punch these politicians in the, you know, metaphorical dick to get them to do something. And so it's been such an eye-opener and such a great stepping stone, I guess, and a way to really combine my science with things that I love and affect change in a way that I probably didn't think I could really do. And it's been a privilege to work alongside all of these weapons of the environmental world.
Yeah, I could. That sounds like it. And like, I'm guessing as part of that as well, you probably have seen, as you mentioned at the start, like a lot of places around the world, like amazing locations, which could be sad because maybe seeing how they change, but yeah, just seeing them, like, yeah.
Yeah, I've been really privileged with my modeling career that, you know, I have worked all over the world on it. Every continent except Antarctica, but I went to Antarctica, so that's good.
But you didn't get you didn't step onto it?
No, I did step onto Antarctica, but I just didn't model there.
Oh, okay.
I went there on a science trip. Okay. But no, I definitely stepped. I couldn't go all that way without stepping on there.
Okay, I was going to say.
So I traveled the world, and I still do travel the world when it opens up again, modeling, and been to these really obscure places and places that you wouldn't go to probably if you were just a tourist. And you've been like so privileged to have seen some very remote wilderness and work with different conservation groups too all around the world. And that's, you know, has been such an eye-opener into the effects that we've had on our environment, but also just the beauty and the uniqueness of all of these ecosystems that, you know, we are so privileged to be a part of.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess this is almost probably impossible to answer, but so I'll give my answer first. But like, in terms of the sense of awe, I still remember, this is only just fresh in my memory because I was in Iceland a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the first time I ever actually realized that a glacier was a mountain of ice and standing there and seeing that and like I still feel that feeling now. Like, mm-hmm. I've never felt so much awe in my life than that, because it's just like I didn't realize that my brain couldn't compute a mountain made of ice until I saw it. But like, I don't know, do you have any examples like that or things that stand?
Yeah, I mean, I really like that. It's like, goddamn, the top of the world is a freezer and it's just frozen our mountains. Do you know what, actually, on that, I have had a sense of awe, but it's like about glaciers, but the melting of glaciers and the retreat of glaciers. And I had that in Iceland, seeing the markers in the ground or in the ice of where the glacier was only 2 years before and how far it had retreated and melted. And also in Antarctica, there were little islands that were now exposed, and I saw photos from the 1950s of where this glacier was and then looked at it like in real life and was like, oh wow, like that glacier is kilometers away now and there's little islands exposed that were once underneath that glacier. And to see that is actually a sense of awe. And I guess we think of awe as a positive thing, but it was awe, and it was, I guess, awe inspiring in the way that, you know, we need to change. And it was inspiring to and encouraging to be like, no, we need to change now, and we need to make our voices heard so that we can change and that people know this and see this and understand this. And I think a negative reversal, I guess.
Yeah, that's the most positive way of taking that negative.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of what I do now all the time, is look at something that should be a negative but be like, okay, how can we turn this into a positive? How can we put a not just positive wash it to make it look good and pretty for people, but be like, okay, this is a negative, this is really sad, but this can be positive now because we can affect change, we can start action, we can light that fire under your butt to make a difference now, to keep it for your grandkids or, you know, someone for the future. So I've got to see things in that light now to keep myself working. Otherwise, I'd be in a ball in the corner just rocking back and forth.
Look, I understand. I've had that, like, yeah, kind of gone through it myself a little bit, just... Yeah, it can feel like a lot, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Actually, do you want to talk? Do you have anything to say about that COP26 thing that happened recently?
No. God damn it. I mean, there is so much to say. God. One, I can't believe, well, look, I actually can believe ScoMo went there, basically funded by the oil industry and Santos, and, you know, he went there like it was a trade fair, showcasing Australia's way of doing things, which is oil. And I think the rest of the world just like, you guys are a laughingstock. You guys are so stupid. Do you not read the science? Like, it's all there. It's been there for decades. How do you not know? So I think it's actually embarrassing for Australia as a whole to be at COP26 in 2001 spruiking gas. Especially when we know how detrimental it is. It's a fossil fuel. It's methane emissions, which are more potent than carbon emissions, and can do real damage to our atmosphere and to the environment. So that is crazy. I think the fact that we signed up to end deforestation, that's great, especially for our role in forestry in Australia, because we do have a big impact with forestry and deforestation in Australia. So hopefully that's going to make a lot of changes to Australia. We didn't sign up to end coal or phase coal out for obvious reasons, because our government right now really has a weird love affair with fossil fuels and coal.
I mean, so crazy.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure ScoMo sleeps with that lump of coal still under his pillow at night. Just strokes it.
And it keeps giving you money, so that's why it helps. Yeah,
exactly.
It's the tooth under the pillow that just keeps delivering.
Yeah, like the fairy coal mother's here again. yeah, so there's a lot of negative things, but, you know, and the fact that China and Russia didn't send their presidents is a big thing, but there were their delegates there for the country to negotiate. So that, you know, a lot of people get stuck on the fact that, oh, the, you know, Russia and China weren't there. Well, they were there. They were just there in a different form, but they're still, they're the people that do the negotiating. Like the prime minister isn't really in these meetings doing the negotiating as such, especially, well, I hope ScoMo wasn't because he's an idiot.
They just gave him some coal and he played in the corner. Yeah.
It's fine. I'm from Cronulla. I can say what I want about him.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but all in all, I think COP26 now, it's about action and it's about action fast. And I think there's a lot of countries that are willing to move fast. And I think for me, it's about recognizing our neighbors, and especially for us in Oceania and the Pacific, like we have neighbors that are literally going to lose not just their house, their entire country. It will be underwater. If we look at places like Tuvalu, like they are already environmental refugees, and that's something that we don't think about too often. And it's not only just, you know, our neighbors of different countries in the South Pacific, it's also our families. It's the Torres Strait Islanders. They're part of Australia and they're losing their homes too. Like they're digging up their buried and moving them because they're being inundated by sea level rise. So we need to think about these people as people. And just because we're not feeling those effects in our backyard right now, or, you know, as an individual, we kind of need to move out of that mindset of that individuality and selfishness and go, well, these are people. And if that was me and I was in their shoes, how would I feel? And there's things that we can do to help these people and help humanity as a whole. So, for me, it's about, you know, protecting and preserving these amazing countries and places and cultures that are really important to all of humanity.
Yeah, no, look, I agree. And I also think, like, even though this is probably going to sound, I'm not trying to be cold, but I'm trying to kind of go from their point of view. It's like, it also helps you because they're not just going to sit there and be flooded. Like, they're going to come to wherever, like, as in, it's
100%.
Not, your neighbors being calm is good for you. Like, as in,
100%. Like, yeah.
From a purely selfish reason, it's better. Like, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And like, if you take it from the point of view of the government right now to refugees that are fleeing, you know, war-torn countries, or, you know, we're kind of saying, well, no, you can't come here, but these are now environmental refugees. So it's the same thing. Like, are we not going to let them in? But they literally don't have a country. They don't have a piece of land anymore to live on. So, if we can protect them and their cultures and their habitats and their ecosystems and their amazing biodiversity, then it's better for everyone.
Yeah, no, 100% yeah. I agree. Got so many different directions I can go with this, but I feel like we did touch on the, you know, this is something I wonder, because I actually haven't interviewed a model before. So I am curious. So I think one of the things that people can sometimes think with modeling, and maybe you can tell me that it's true or not, is that obviously models, some people are like, oh, it's just taking pictures and it's not that hard and it's not that much work and stuff like that. And then like, I think that there's a lot of work in it. Firstly, just it's the skill to taking a good picture, but also like just the general work days, very intense. Is that true for some people and not for others? Is it like, oh, some of them are the ditzy models people picture, or is it like actually they're all very driven and, you know, how does it fall, I guess? Do you have any comments on that?
Well, I guess the industry is like any other industry and there's, you know, a spectrum of people that work on it. But they can be really long, grueling days. It isn't just, oh, you just stand in front of a camera and you smile and then you're done. Sometimes I work 16-hour days in the heat or in other countries where people literally don't speak English, so I've had to use sign language everything for the entire day, which is fine and interesting. You'll be working in all different locations, temperatures. Quite often you're shooting swimwear on a friggin' freezing cold day in ocean that is just so cold you you know, you could key a car with your nipples. So you're fighting the elements quite often, or, sometimes I literally put on 120 outfits in a day. And people don't understand that. Would you want to get changed 120 times?
I just don't even know how you could physically get through that many in a day.
Right? It's nuts. Like, oh, here come another pair of jeans. Oh, get that off. It's pretty crazy. So, it's always different. You're always working with different teams and different people and different personalities and egos, abilities, obviously, as well, like new models, more established and models that have been working for a long time. So they like, I feel like I'm can just get in on a shoot now and bust it out and then I'm done. People kind of know what they're going to get from me. I've been doing it for such a friggin' long time. I never thought I'd ever be a model. Two, I didn't think I'd still be here doing it right now. But hey, I actually really enjoy the creativity of a lot of it. And the fact that I get to meet people from all walks of life, the fact that I get to travel and kind of meld that into my environmental world is really cool. But yeah, I mean, some days modeling is great. Other days it's a shit show. Some days it can be easy and other days it's just so friggin' hard. You just wiped at the end of the day and then you have to get up the next day and do it all over again. Mm. So, and sometimes, I'll fly 27 hours just to go to a job. So people don't like their 1 hour commute. And I'm like, well, I've got to do that for 27 hours and then get off and somehow look good and and be all smiley and happy in front of a camera. But you get it done and you do it for the love of the creativity and the fact that, it helps me be a science communicator too. Mm.
So I guess like with the creativity angle, like how do you express that? How do you mean that? Is that just in terms of...
In terms of the way you move your body, the poses you make, the sets that you're on, or, you might be shooting at a house or outside or at the beach, like you're always working around and what's around you. So you constantly, your brain is constantly thinking, okay, like, well, what does my body look like here? What does my face look like here? Does the outfit, because usually they're trying to sell an outfit if you're working for a company. It's kind of different if you're working for a magazine and you're doing an editorial. That's more about the feeling of the shoot, whereas if you're working for a company, it's more about selling the garment, so making sure the garment looks good. So you might have a face that looks like a smash crab in the photo, but the garment looks good. Yeah. And that's what matters. Yeah. They're trying to sell that thing, Yeah. It's going to fly off the shelves with your face looking like you've just chewed on a wasp.
Love it, yeah.
But, so I guess the creativity comes in knowing and understanding your body and being confident with your body too. And one of the things that I love about being in the curvy model or the plus size modeling industry is the fact that I've had and grown in a massive appreciation for my body, something that I never had when I was younger or in high school. I was a size Australian 14 from 14 years old, and stereotypically, and especially back then, that's seen as like a large size. And I was never large. I was just always freaking tall and real sporty. And that was my natural size, and it still is today. So for me, feeling uncomfortable as a teenager being that size to now being a 37-year-old woman who's just like, hell yeah, this is my body. This is what it does. My thighs rub together. Big fucking deal.
At least you down the door, you're like, yeah, Laura's in town.
Yeah, yeah. I'll sit on the toilet, and because my thighs touch, that means that I won't drop my phone to the toilet. What a freaking bonus, right? How good is that?
That's pretty good, actually, yeah.
I know. So, you got to think about these things. You don't need a thigh gap. Mm. You're better off for them to just to rub together. Yes, so having this appreciation for my body and what it does and what it allows me to achieve now, regardless of what anyone friggin' thinks about it, is so liberating. Like, I wouldn't be able to do half of the environmental stuff I do, or, stand in front of people and talk with authority, or model and actively sell something if I felt really negatively about my body. Mm. And so having that appreciation and just a no fucks attitude to what other people think and what other people think my body should look like, or how a body should look, or how it should move or act, like, it's just so goddamn good.
Yeah, and like I got to say, you dealing with that there would make you better prepared to deal with the let's say, closed-mindedness that would come with a lot of the science talk as well.
Yeah, definitely. All of that. And also like a lot of the really negative, very detrimental things that people say on social media.
Oh my God.
Like, talk about, like, if, you know, they talk about having thick skin, like, I must have friggin' dinosaur skin because the amount of shit that has been spoken in the past, not so much anymore, or a little bit from Survivor, but whatever. I actually don't care. I feel like I'm impenetrable.
Right.
I'm wearing a chain mail suit of skin. I'm like, your words cannot hurt me, random people on the internet sitting behind a screen.
Is that like, was that a conscious thing that took time to develop? Like when you first started out, you'd get comments. Cause like, I'm not saying 37. So back when you started, there was no Twitter, wasn't there? There was no...
Back in the day, son, there was no social media when I started the modeling.
Our insults were in person, not like you guys with your web.
They would just spit it in my face.
Yeah.
they'd send me a letter with abuse to my home. And ring my parents' landline.
Oh my God, that sounds like it's coming from a true place. So,
Social media didn't start. I do remember this. I got on, I had a Facebook page, but my Instagram like started, I think, in 2012. So I'd already been modeling for a while by then. But there were like blogs and things. So before social media, you know, people would be posting your images on blogs and people would be commenting on that. And you'd go for a scroll. And at first I'd be like, oh shit, man, like, man, this is really getting me. This is cutting me deep right to the heart. And then I started being like, what? I didn't even know these people. Like, why do I even care what they think about me? I don't have to make them happy. And their opinion of me is none of my business, really, because it actually shouldn't affect me and it shouldn't matter at all. So I really, learned fast to get over it and just not worry about them, because I knew what I was doing was making me happy. I was, I had a purpose to my life and I was making a difference. And to me, those were fundamentally my core values. And if I was living up to them, then it doesn't really matter what anyone actually thinks.
Yeah.
When I go snorkeling and scuba diving and I go picking up rubbish, like the fish and the dolphins and the whales don't give a shit if I have a fat ass. Like, so why do I care if, you know, Joe Skits 69 cares if I have a fat ass? Like, I should never care. Joe Skits. I've burnt your comment into my memory.
No.
I guess I just don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
But funny enough, Survivor and being on Survivor, man, there are some real Survivor fans that are total dicks out there on social media. Holy crap. And I know there's people on previous Survivors and this one that, you know, weren't really prepared for the onslaught of comments that are really thrown at you on socials. And there were some really disgusting, really, really disgusting comments out there. We all work together to move past it, and there were some things that got to me, and it wasn't so much about me personally, it was about other people and friends of mine that I made on the show, and just people with a lot of naivety around obviously reality TV and social media in general, not understanding that what you see on TV is like minuscule compared to what actually happened out there. So, you know, a 1 hour episode is actually 48 to 72 hours of real life condensed. And so of course you're not going to see everything and understand everything and know everything that's going on. So you've got to be open-minded about what has actually been shown to you on TV and be like, oh, okay, well, yeah. So maybe I didn't like that about that person, but I actually don't know the whole story. So, you know, I think that's a really good mindset to have in normal everyday life too. Hey, I don't know what that person is going through or went through in the past or is, you know, how this is affecting them. So maybe if I have an open mind and ask questions first or just get over it, then I'll be a better person for it.
That's actually not a bad correlation. Like that's very true, because you're only seeing like a snapshot, which is exactly what you're seeing with reality TV. So it's like you haven't seen anything around that. So not to leap too quickly to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, a person might be a bit of a dick to you one day, but you don't like it. You know, and it can affect you and you might be like, that person's a dick, but you know, there's obviously usually something going on behind them that is causing them to be a dick, or they don't realize they're being a dick in that moment. So, you know, let's just be mindful that people can be dicks and there's something going on.
And just go by and just smile and be like, hey, I can teach you where to put the recycling bin is.
Yeah. Yeah. And be like, hey, you're being a dick, but, you know, do you want some help to not be a dick?
Yeah, actually, be like, is everything okay? Like, that's very
dick awareness. Dick awareness month.
That could be very easily misconstrued.
Oh, I think that's going to need a real good marketing campaign.
Yeah. Might need a name change. actually, now that we're on the Survivor talk, I guess I should do at least a quick little shout out to it. We've gotten so lost in the other stuff. I guess the one thing I know is that my friends who do like Survivor, like, firstly, it's like the longest running show ever at this point. And it does seem like the people who are fans, there is just such a very intense fan base.
Yeah, like, they're a cult. They are actually a cult. Yeah, it's fine. Some of them are great. I met a guy today who is a huge Survivor fan who has a tattoo of Survivor. Like, he's that into it. I'm like, well, that's cool, man. Yeah, it's each to their own. But it is a great show, so that's fine.
Did you watch it before you went on?
A little bit. Yeah, I have watched a little bit. I mean, I can't say that I am a super fan or anything. Probably would have been a lot more helpful if I was a super fan.
I've got to say, because from what I understand, it's all about learning the strategies and all that.
Yeah, and it's kind of like you can't have to be a dick on that show, to be honest, to like get through. Like, you have to be a dick to the people that you make friends with at some stage if you really want to get like all the way through the end. So, but you try to do it in like the least dickiest way. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of dicks going on this podcast today.
I'm just with that line. I'm picturing like the headline tomorrow: the biggest dick, one Survivor.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be great. I would be happy to be the biggest dick and 500 grand richer, yeah. But unfortunately, it wasn't me.
I guess on that topic, just because, I'm a very casual watcher. I kind of know because I'm the same age as you, so I've been watching it my whole life in like kind of the background, but never actually been as hectically engaged. Was that the first thing where that seems like very national attention, that thing? Was that like a step up for you in terms of trying to get the profile in general?
Realistically, the reason that I went on it was I thought it was a great challenge and a pretty cool thing to do. And I'm all about challenges and stepping outside of my comfort zone to do something fun. But two, it was really to, you know, put my name out there in front of people that wouldn't know me, to spread awareness about the environmental work that I do and get eyes on, you know, some of the organizations that I work with so that, you know, it's just sharing the environmental love a little bit further.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to do it, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know how much time. I guess we should probably tie it off, I guess, eventually. I'm considering asking so many questions, but I'm going to keep you from everything else.
That's fine.
One quick thing, actually, before we do. In terms of books, just because I'm very interested, and this is a book show, so I should at least have you shout out there. In terms of biology is actually the one I'm more interested in. Was there any cornerstone books there that really stick out in your mind that you might have read or experienced that kind of – or even recently that kind of put you, like, where you're like, everyone should read this?
Yeah, actually, I read so many nerdy nature books, like ridiculous amounts. And I think some really good, easy entry-level ones that are interesting that have been written by a journalist, Susan Casey, that are quite cool to read. There's one called The Devil's Teeth about great white sharks in the Farallon Islands. But this woman, she goes as an investigative journalist and kind of gets into it, which is really cool. Another one called The Way that she wrote to Susan Casey, and it's all about freak and rogue waves. And, you know, she goes with Laird Hamilton, the big wave surfer, and then she looks at these huge waves that have occurred in Alaska and all over the North Sea, and it's really interesting.
Really? That sounds like such a topic that's like, that's a book written on that.
Yeah, and it's a really cool book. Like, it's easy to read, and it's just so interesting because she just like follows things about big waves all over the world and like gets into it from like, there's science in there, but it's really easily digestible. So I think it's just a really cool friggin' topic. And when you learn about this huge wave that happened in this bay in Alaska not that long ago. Like, it is hectic. I'm going to balls it up if I talk about how big it was, so I'm not going to. Just know that it was really freaking huge. What else have I been reading? Oh, I read Phosphorescence by Julia Baird, this one.
Oh, you've got an
excellent and book. I do have it next to me. It's actually a really beautiful book. It's not necessarily about biology, but the whole premise of it comes from about phosphorescence and bioluminescence and things in nature that are sparkly and beautiful and create their own light. And it follows like a personal journey of hers, but it's quite a really beautiful book to have a little bit of self-awareness and reverence in, which I liked about it. Mm. And yeah, I mean, I have so many. I should just put all my books on my Instagram because I would love people to nerd out on them.
Yeah.
There's another one called True or Poo.
There that's it always is. A good okay,
fun animal book. And then I've got like lots of books about butterflies. The Secret World of Butterflies is a really cool book about the exotic animal trade and butterflies and how we're breeding butterflies to kill straight away so that people can put them on their walls because they'll be undamaged if they are bred in captivity and then killed immediately. Because if they live their life, then usually, you know, they damage their wings because they have sex and they get like, you know, a bit rambunctious or a caterpillar nibbles on their wing or something. So you don't want to put a half-eaten butterfly on your wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all about that and CITES, which is the, you know, the illegal trade of exotic species. And yeah, it's really, I mean, I find all this crap interesting. Other people be like, that's really boring. But for me, I read a lot of nonfiction more so than fiction. And
yeah, no, a book I read a little while ago was about discovering longitude.
Ooh, and there you go.
The right clocks needed to find longitude. So I'm with you. I'm all about the deep dive. Like,
yeah,
when it comes to biology,
you big nerd.
Yeah, it's such a big, like, for me, evolution's my thing, because I year 11 biology, I discovered what evolution was, and I've just been obsessed.
Yes. Have you read Charles Darwin's Origin of the Species?
I've only read. Okay, here's something crazy happening when I was in uni. Right, I was reading Charles Darwin, the Origin of, like, I read Dawkins, Selfish Gene,
yep.
And I've read everything of Dawkins that has to do with evolution.
Yes.
I've just
obsessed, so good.
Yeah, so good. One recent one is probably it's kind of evolution, but it was The Gene. By if you know that one, it's called The Gene.
Yep.
Siddhartha, I can't remember his full name. That was brilliant. But yeah, with Dawkins, right? With Darwin, I was in uni at one time, and I was sitting there, and someone was handing out books like that, The Origin of Species. They were just handing out. Everyone was like, "Oh, cool," as if. And then I opened it, and I remember reading it and being like, "This seems weird." Like, as in, I just felt like it was missing something. And I actually went online, and it turned out, in a twist, that it was a religious group that was handing out copies of Charles Darwin's The Origin of Species, but with like sections cut out when they were handing it out.
What?
To I know.
Did it have like, and then there was a snake and a man ripped out his rib and created a woman. Oh, there's a vagina made out of a rib.
Yeah.
What? I mean, that doesn't make any sense, which is what's in the Bible. But that's crazy.
I'm not an ape. Yeah, no. No, exactly. I was shocked because the part that blows my mind there, this actually is, like you deal with this in anything, it's just ideology, but like the idea of someone sitting there and cutting it out and being like, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, pause for a second there where you're like, I can't let this information be out there. Like, is there a leap there that you could do in your head? You're like, oh, no, this gives it away too much.
Like, no, they didn't go from apes to humans. They went from apes to humans. It just makes no sense.
Yeah.
How are they even? I don't even know how they would rip parts of that book out to make it make sense.
Yeah, no, I just remember it just seemed very choppy, and I was like very confused by it. There was like whole sections, but yeah. Look, on the bright side, do you remember when, like, I feel like that part, evolution's no longer up for question. I feel like, what do you reckon?
Yes, I'm definitely on board with that.
Yeah, but like, no, I don't mean in terms of the science. I just got one over, Laura. Actually, just 2 days. No, I mean in terms of like, if you again, because we're roughly the same age. Like, as in when we were younger, I feel like the idea of evolution was in pop culture even more up for debate than now. Like, do you see that switch of just general acceptance, which is like interesting. I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hope that happens for climate change overnight before it's too late. I mean, the evolution thing, it's like, it's not too bad. It's not really affecting if people don't really believe it. I mean, each to their own, but climate change, it actually makes a difference if people believe it or not. So, man.
Yeah. We didn't end on the most positive note in this.
Oh, God, so depressive. Like a dumpster fire, this goddamn podcast.
We were doing so well. It was all happening. And just to remind you, climate change is real, everyone. But on that note, is there any, before we sign off then, is there anything you want people to look at? I can put in the show notes as well, but any shout outs you want to give, any specific causes or anything? And what can people do right now, I guess, that's like a real thing or right now or whatever?
There are so many amazing things people can do to make a difference right now. And if you want one of the best ways, the most effective ways to make a difference towards climate change, it's to understand where your super is invested. Because a lot of people don't understand, and there is, Australians have around $3 trillion invested in super, and a majority of that is invested in fossil fuels. And the way our super works, we don't really know where our money is going. So find out from your superannuation company where your money is invested. And if they can't tell you, or it is invested in fossil fuels and they don't have an option to not do that, then you can switch it over to somewhere like Future Super or Verve Super. And they're two of the best companies that are not funding fossil fuels. And I'm having amazing returns from them too. So that's one of the best ways that you can make a difference.
Yeah. And funnily enough, in terms of forward thinking, every company's investing in anyway. So it does make sense. Yeah. It's a dying industry, essentially. But that's a very good point, though, like, because that is something anyone can do right now and just go online. And,
yeah. Yeah. It's real easy. Be an adult.
Nice. As if only everyone else could be. Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on. That was a really fun chat. Yeah. That was awesome. So thanks very much, Laura Wells.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.